I start with a question for you. Why do some organizations make it? And while others just drift along and finally just die out, membership dwindles and dwindles, and finally there's nobody left. Maybe the minister dies or he moves on. I hope that's not what's going to happen to Murray, Utah, and I hope that I can help you here in Ohio. But I wondered about this because, to me, there's got to be some factor that we need to be aware of, be an organization that is constantly growing, and our people, although they are obviously getting a lot older, I'm not the oldest gentleman here. I know there are people here that are a lot older than I am, but I feel young, and I feel like I've got a few more years, and I hope I have. But what is the difference? Maybe it's a small difference. One group grows to new heights. Now, I hope that's Ohio. While others eventually fail. What's the difference? Have you given any thought? Well, I'm going to explain that, but I want you to open your Bibles to 1 Timothy chapter 4, first of all, before I tell you the title of my sermon, then that'll make it pretty clear. Let's go to 1 Timothy 4, because it really describes what's happening in our day. Verse 1, the Spirit expressly says, and again, remember now, I'm reading from the American Standard Bible, which is very close to King James, slight difference, so bear with me. The Spirit expressly says that in the latter times, and I think we are in the latter times right now, some will fall away from the faith, paying attention to deceitful spirits and doctrines of demons. Well, now, those are pretty drastic things that people are doing. They're falling away to deceitful spirits and doctrines of demons. And you don't think of just getting tired and not wanting to come to church as any of those things. You lose interest in God's way of life and you just lose interest. But Timothy is a little more specifically. Actually, Paul was writing to Timothy. Timothy was a young man. And he said, the Spirit is going to tell you this is going to happen. Well, I'm telling you right now, and I'm not the Spirit. And I think we all know the latter times are upon us. We don't know how much time we have left, and I'm not setting any date. He says, by means of the hypocrisy of liars seared in their own conscience as with a branding iron. Now, I think you guys all know about branding irons. That's how you identify cattle, that kind of thing. You just touch it and it burns the fur a little bit. Well, if you touch a human being's brain, well, what are you doing? Well, obviously this is speaking poetically rather than not actually, because you aren't branded, but in a sense, he is saying your conscience are branded. You are changed. You are doing things you never thought you would do before. Now, you know that's happening in this church today. I say the church, I mean the church of God. We have one whole organization that has given up on the Sabbath and the holy days. They have gone back to Christmas and Easter and all the other foolish days. You know which church I'm talking about, which organization. I'm not even sure of the name of it anymore. But it came from the Church of God, I know that. We have people who have strange doctrines, strange beliefs. You know, I could tell you about things right now that I doubt you all would agree with me on. You know, that's kind of the fate of the ministerial council. We have to bring to your attentions once in a while things that are maybe a little different, that maybe you need to think a little bit differently. Now, I'm not talking about the Sabbath and the holy days. Relax. I still believe firmly in both those. I don't want to ever see that change because it's the Holy Spirit that's directing me, and I hope it's directing you. And the first thing it tells me is keep the Sabbath day. All right, so we got these crazy things, even forbidding marriage, abstaining from meats, or whatever you abstain from, and it's telling you that there is something wrong with God's church if you could fall away over such ridiculous doctrines. Now, I hope you're all well grounded in all the truth and you would never let those kind of things fall away. But the Bible is telling you it will happen to you. Some of you, maybe. Unless you really stay. Now, what's the difference then? Why would you fall away? Well, the answer is the title of my sermons, The Importance of Leadership. Leadership. And Paul was talking to Timothy, hey, young Timothy, watch out for your church. A lot of people are going to fall away with strange doctrines. And I conclude the reason is that it's because they do not have adequate leadership. It's always been a problem with God's church. I talked with Pharaoh Vincent. He's a nice guy, but he's so busy. Bill's scheduling him, and now he's scheduling himself to Indianapolis. He has to go down to two or three places. He goes to Atlanta, Georgia. He goes two or three places down in Kentucky. I'm thinking, man, how's this guy ever going to get up to Indianapolis? Now he wants to come up here once a month. Well, I hope we can find enough manpower to really help that church. But this is true everywhere. I mean, I'm the only minister ever gets out to Murray to speak of, but that's okay. Those people are well-grounded, I hope well-grounded in truth, and they will not fall away. Maybe because they are expecting me to come there every month and they're hanging on my... I don't know. All I know is I pray for them every day, that they will stay faithful. Now I have to learn more about you guys so I can pray for you too. Because we really don't have enough leadership in God's church. I'm going to read a few more things here because he goes on to correct things. But I want you to go down to verses 11 to 14. Prescribe and teach these things. Let no one look down on your youthfulness. Now, Timothy was a young man. So Paul, who was an older fellow who was teaching Timothy, warned him that youth is something that people are going to look at. His youth. They're going to think he's not qualified. But rather in speech, conduct, love, faith, and purity, show yourself an example of those who believe. Well, that's a pretty big calling right there. You know, you got to have love, you got to have concern, you got to have speech, you got to have conduct. There's a lot of requirements. Until I come, give attention to the public reading of the Scripture. And I notice that's one of the things you usually do here, is it not? You have somebody read some scriptures. Is that something that's common practice or just occasionally? See, I don't know. I think that's a good idea, though, read scriptures publicly. Maybe it's the only scriptures you'll hear that maybe the minister was talking about some other thing. But I always try to read some scriptures. Do not neglect the spiritual gift within you, which was bestowed upon you through prophetic utterance with the laying on of hands by the presbytery. Okay, I'll get it right, or something close to that. That means the leadership. Laying on of hands. Now, you're all familiar with laying on of hands. And I'm sure you've had a sermon or two about the laying on of hands and the importance of that doctrine. And it's not something that I have in my hands or Bill Watson has in his hands that's special. It is that we pray to God and he's got a lot of special things. He can help you with a lot of things. And the first thing he has to do is give you his Holy Spirit and ordain you to an office of responsibility. And once you have that office, then he gives you the help that you need to do the job. It's not an easy task. So the one thing that we have to have in this church is leadership. And the first thing that we have to understand, youth is not that big of a factor. Now, youth is important not to be too young, because if you're too young, you don't ordain a child, for instance, because it doesn't have any experience at all. You can't ordain a young man, though, or a young person who is really meets all the qualifications. So how do we get more leadership in God's church? I'm not saying there's anybody here. Maybe there is, I don't know, that is in the MAP program who is qualified to be a minister. I don't really know. I don't even know you fellows and your wives, but of course the fellows are the ones we ordain. So I hope that there is growth, there is leadership growth, potential in this area. I think there is. I think you've got things well organized. And how many people are coming this next week here? You've got Pittsburgh and Columbus and Toledo and Bath. Is that correct? You've got four congregations coming together. And you have about 100 people here or more? That's a lot of work. Well, you know, all you ladies do an amazing job. Got goodies up there, every Sabbath. And I really do appreciate that, and I hope the congregation appreciates it. Maybe some of the fellows even bring things. I don't know. I don't even know who brings anything. I know you do bring things. That's good. We've got to have leadership. You know, leadership used to be, and I know this was years ago, they would make sure you measured the skirt length of the ladies with a yardstick. I remember those days. They were really picky days on measuring. They got out the rulers and measured the guy's hair. What in the world? Now, I never did those things, but I mean, that was what was taught in Worldwide Church. That was years and years ago. We gave that up a long time ago. But, of course, there was an attitude there. And so we said finally, well, what are we going to do if we're going to have right kind of leadership? We got to have the right kind of ministry. Makes sense, does it not? And at that particular time, we had a lot of problems in the Church of God International. It was maybe a long time ago now, probably 10 years or 12 years, I can't remember exactly. But we had really a crisis at God's church. We had, at that time, a ministerial council. And we had, eventually, 9 members. That, back in those days, we had 8 members, and that's about 1/4 of the entire ministry. We're members of the ministerial council. And we now have reduced it down to where we meet once a year. We try to handle everything else with a telephone call. It occurs sometimes. Maybe we have it. Well, we said, what do they do in Acts chapter 15? How do they solve this problem? How do they have the right kind of organization to feed a growing church with the right doctrines and right understanding? And what are we supposed to do? How do we choose men? Do you know what we finally concluded? We all feel, and this is a strong feeling among all the ministerial council members, that we're all one among many. We all believe that we each have an individual responsibility, and when we know somebody has a better responsibility, a better understanding of a particular topic, we yield to him. We're one among equals. We all feel like we're equally qualified. And we have tried really hard to maintain that attitude. And you guys got to think along the same line, that you all have your skills, you're one, but you're among many who are your equal. We don't have a ministry here that says, all right, now, buddy, shape up there. Get your skirt length right. Now, you don't ever say that to guys. Make sure you have your suit on properly. Make sure your tie is straight. You know, we don't say that. Ladies, we don't say anything about your hairdo. Well, maybe somebody will say something about your hairdo sometime. Compliment you. But the point is, you all have talent. You all have abilities. You're qualifying to be the greatest leaders the earth has ever come to see. So we've got to have more leaders. We got a ministerial apprentice program, and I like it. It's tough. It really requires the ministerial candidates, the MAP program, they really put out a lot of effort. And they all have to have sponsors by a minister who's with them all the time and or occasionally comes and sees them and gives them assignments. All right, I want you to do this. I want you to go to so-and-so and attend this funeral. Maybe he even says, well, I want you to go to this marriage ceremony and learn all about it. We got to learn all these things. Not the hard way. I remember the first sermon I ever, no, the first funeral I ever gave was when I moved from Brickettwood, England, to Big Sandy, Texas. And I had to give a funeral for a little baby. That was my first funeral. That was not pleasant. But since then, of course, I've had to bury many of the church members. I'm one of these old codgers, and people are just dying left and right. I'm just very thankful. My father is 100 and a half years old. And what can I say? You know, he's going on 101. I'd like to have a 101-year-old father. It's a pleasure. It's nice. Unfortunately, I'm hoping I got the genes, but I don't know. Maybe the only genes he gave me are the ones I'm wearing. I really like to have the aged ones. But what characteristics does a good leader have? If this is a qualification to become part of God's church and part of the ministry, part of the church as a whole, part of leadership, training, what are some of the characteristics? Well, I want you to turn back to the most important one, I always think. Numbers, please. Chapter 12. Numbers chapter 12. It's all about Moses. We know about him. Verse 3. This is a parenthetical expression probably written by Ezra, one of God's ministers, one of the priests of the ministry. And he probably added this verse because this is not something Moses would ever write about himself. It was written in one of Moses' books, and it said here, "Now the man Moses was very humble, more than any man who was on the face of the earth." And you wonder about the job that Moses had of leadership. He only had 3 million people to worry about. You know, our leaders here have 50 or 60. You're lucky. How would you like to have 3 million to worry about? He was frustrated many times by the attitude of the people. He made a few mistakes. He wasn't perfect. But when you have 3 million carnal-minded, grumbling people, it's hard to keep a right attitude sometimes. But he was very humble. He could be entreated by anybody. He came up with this idea of captains of 1,000. Actually, he didn't. It was his son-in-law. You all know about captains of 150s and all that. We used to practice that. Big Sandy, when we had our meetings in Tent City and lots of Feast of Tabernacles activities, we had people who were responsible for 1,000, people responsible for 100, people responsible for 50. You know, we've had that thing too. Now, God's method is 70 equal elders. The equal elders. One among many equals. They all had God's Spirit. They got all judged. And this is why we chose ministerial council the way we did. We wanted to get people who would really admit they have certain weaknesses and they have certain strengths. Where they have the strength, we call upon them. They have weakness, we don't call upon them because they know they cannot contribute much. And that's something I can talk about later. That's not important now. Leaders are humble men. They're not full of vanity and conceit, but they're just really humble people that can be entreated. You want to be anointed? You need anointed? Well, call down the elders of the church and they will come and anoint you. Humility is probably the most important factor of a good leader. We cannot get pig-headed men who just are so full of themselves they cannot help anybody because all they do is help themselves. You have to have humble people. People willing to serve. People willing to put out the food for a potluck or to arrange the chairs. I assume you have all people already trained to help you to do that. That's great. If not, I will talk to Bill about it and we'll see what we can do. He may give you a sermon that's a little bit stronger than mine because he knows you. He might say, "Well, you lazy bunch of dullards, what's wrong with you anyhow?" No, I would not say that to you. I'm just joking when I say that to you. I don't consider anybody like that because I really don't know. Everything seems to be well organized here. That's great. But remember humility. That is the most important. Now I want you to turn to Judges chapter 6. I'm giving you some of the characteristics, and it starts out with humility. But let's take Numbers chapter 6 and verse 14. Because one of the things you've got to realize, your leaders may be young men. You might think, "Wow, I'm 100 years old. Why should I listen to that whippersnapper?" Well, that's not really the right attitude. You should be willing to accept correction or help from anybody. So here is a story in Judges chapter 6, and I'm just giving you part of it. Gideon. You've all heard of Gideon. He was one of the leaders in Israel. He was a young man. He didn't feel like he was qualified. Well, we read that constantly. I'm going to give you a couple more scriptures so you can see that is the case. Chapter 6 of Judges, verse 14. "The Lord looked at him and said, 'Go in this your strength and deliver Israel from the hand of the Midian.'" Well, now, wait a minute. He's a young guy. Here's God going to him and saying, "Deliver these people from the hand of the Midians," who were controlling this. I think it was They had been controlling them for 7 years. They were in slavery to the Midianites. God says, all right, get out there and help these people. What? You know, he probably didn't understand what in the world was going on. Go in your strength, deliver Israel from the hand of Midian. Have I not sent you? Oh, boy, you know, God speaks to somebody and he tells them to do something, you better listen. Gideon did. And he said to him, O Lord, how shall I deliver Israel? Behold, my family is the least in Manasseh, and I am the youngest in my father's house. I'm just a kid. You want me to deliver all of Israel, which at this point maybe was somewhere between 6 million, maybe. I don't know. There's 3 million came out of Egypt, and this is way after the time of 40 years wandering and a lot of years in land. So I don't know what the date is Gideon came around. I haven't studied that yet. Verse 16, but the Lord said to him, surely I'll be with you. You shall defeat Midian as one man. How do you do that? As one kid against maybe a big nation like Midian that had millions of soldiers. Well, if you're like I am, you would say, I don't know how you're going to do it, God, but I'll try. I'll give it my all. That's what his attitude was. Gideon said to him, if now I have found favor in thy sight, then show me a sign that it is thou who speakest with me. Now, you know, the first reaction most people have, well, I'll do it, but God, you got to show me a sign. I've heard these words, but I've got to know for sure if that's what you want me to do. And so he then asked God to perform a miracle. Well, God's a very accommodating creature, really a man, a being. I don't know what you want to call him. He's God. And he did perform a miracle. And we read about that in this chapter as well. And then he went on. He said, oh, okay, that's a good deal. I really did appreciate that. It really shows me that you know what I want. But now I want you to do one more miracle. He had to have two miracles before he was convinced. Verse 36, and Gideon said to God, if thou wilt deliver Israel through me as thou hast spoken, behold, I will put a fleece of wool on the threshing floor. And if there is dew on the fleece only and is dry on all the ground, then I know that you... Now, this is very unusual because that's one thing I noticed here in Ohio. And I get up in the morning, the table out on the patio and all the grass, everything is covered with dew. You guys have a lot of dew. You've got to have a lot of dew in God's church. D-O, not D-E-W. You know what I'm saying? And it was so when he arose early in the morning and squeezed the fleece, he drained the dew from the fleece, whole bowl full of water. But the ground was dry. You know, because the first miracle was the other way around. He had the fleece out there, and he said, keep that dry and let all the ground be wet, like typically is here in Ohio. I could just try that next time I get out and then put a piece of fleece out there and see what happens. No, I won't. I'm not in a position to do that. Verse 39, so Gideon said to God, do not let thine anger burn against me, that I may speak once more. Please, let me put a test once more with the fleece. Let it now be dry. Well, that's right. This is right. This is the second time. Only on the fleece, and let the dew be on the ground. Okay, he reversed everything. Now, you know, I can just see what's going on in his mind. Because dew is something that's going to be on fleece for sure, if it's on all the ground. How can you keep it dry unless God is performing a miracle? And that's what he did. His name was changed to Zerubbabel. Read that in verse 7. And then, of course, Gideon had all these people lined up and ready to go with him. But God said, can't do it. Too many people. If they do that, they'll think they're the ones that did it. So he had to whittle down the number. You all know about that. And finally, he got down. He said, I want everybody who's fearful to go on my home. So thousands let them went on. Then he finally said, okay, now I want you to bring everybody down there and tell them to take a drink of water. And I never thought about that before. You know, what would most people do? Well, if they got a drink and they're really thirsty, they'd just get down there and lap up the water. Well, that can be something that's dangerous if you've got an enemy around. You're putting head down in water and lapping it. So he said, get those who reach down there and scoop up the water and bring it up to their mouth because they're looking around all the time. And he whittled it down to very few hundred. You all know the story. But it's in this. These are young men who are willing to do the right thing. And this Jerubbabel or Gideon was a young man, but he says, I'll do it. And of course, you all know the story. He did it. Age is not that important in God's sight. 1 Samuel chapter 1 and 1 Samuel chapter 9 and verse 21, just to touch upon one. Saul, first king of Israel. He was from the tiniest tribe of Benjamin. No relation to me. I think I'm an Israelite, but I don't know what tribe. I think it's Ephraim, originally, or Manasseh. But Benjamin was a very... Now, they were small for an obvious reason. They made some really stupid mistakes. And they got the Israelites so mad at them one time, they just decimated them. Now, they had just a few people and no wives. You all know the story. And so, finally, they had to work out a deal where they let all the ladies out who were available for marriage, and they danced around and all that, and these guys grabbed off one, carried them off, and married them. They had children that way. That's the only way they kept their tribe going. So here was this little tiny tribe of Benjamin, yet he became Israel's first king. Of course, you all know that pride and vanity overtook him. He started out as a young guy, but he got vain. Instead of being humble, he got proud, full of vanity, full of pride. And, of course, you all know what happens. He finally lost out. And I don't know what's going to be his status in the world tomorrow. I really don't really understand everything about what God is going to do with the people he brings up in the second resurrection. I'm beginning to understand it. In fact, I'm going to preach on him on the Feast of Tabernacles because I have some ideas. Maybe I'm wrong. But I haven't been able to find anybody to verify or deny it. Maybe you as a congregation can. I'm not even going to tell you what it is right now. I'm just going to whet your appetite. 1 Samuel chapter 18, verse 18. David didn't have a very high opinion of himself when he started out in his kingship. He made a lot of stupid mistakes. God was really testing him to find out what kind of character he had. And he had to become a very humble man. Really humble, bitterly repented and begged God not to take his spirit from him. You all know about David and his great sins, killing his, well, one fellow, one of the soldiers, and taking his wife. And that's part of the story life. Can't do those kind of things. 1 Kings chapter 3, verses 7 and 8. 1 Kings chapter 3, verses 7 and 8. King Solomon considers himself but a little child. Now, he was a grown adult by this time, but he considered himself maturity-wise just like a little child. I'm not worth anything. But, you know, he could have asked for anything, and God said, what do you want? You all know that story. Well, let's see. I don't really have enough money. I think I want to have money. I think I want to have power. I think I want to have jewels. I think I want to have all the wives that can put my in my harem. I don't know. He said, no, I want knowledge. I want the wisdom to know how to take care of all these people. And God said, boy, that was a good choice. I'm going to give you that. And he grew up being the wisest man who ever lived other than Christ. Because he asked for something that didn't really gratify himself personally, but help the people of Israel. I think it's a fascinating story. He had a lot of humility, though. Now, he made a lot of mistakes in later years. I think he'd make a lot of mistakes. He had that many wives and concubines. Make a lot of stupid mistakes. Isaiah chapter 6, verse 5. Isaiah 6, verse 5. Isaiah thought he had unclean lips. You know, he was really in captivity much of his life to the Assyrians and others. And he couldn't speak a word of their language. But his unclean lips meant, I just can't help people because I can't speak clearly. Now, maybe a lot of that was the fact that he didn't speak Assyrian. I don't know. I know what his attitude was. He considered himself unqualified for his job. And he was a little kid when he first started out. And boy, did he have a lot of trials and tests. But he was very humble. God used him mightily. And then finally, Jeremiah chapter 1, verse 6. Jeremiah 1, 6. The great prophet Jeremiah considered himself a little child. Now, he may have been a little bit older, but even then, if he was older, 12, 13 years of age, who am I to go out and tell all the people there that they have to just be patient and wait to go through the captivity? I'm not qualified. But he was humble. But he didn't let youthfulness get in his way, because God was there to help him. Now, it is true that the humble or the young people have a better chance of growing up in the right attitude than those old guys like we have. They're willing to change a lot more. They can be changed. That's the beauty of youth. That's the disadvantage of being an old man or an old lady. You don't want to change as much. My father doesn't want to change one iota. He's set in his ways. He's going to be set in his ways all the way to his grave. There's nothing that I can do to change him. He won't listen to me at all. At least my mother, when she was alive, would listen. But she really didn't do much about her call. Well, she never really had a calling. She was, I think she spent 5 years in the Presbyterian Church. And then I don't know what she did after that, of course, because I moved away. I had no choice. I was grown up and was sent over to Brick and Wood. That's a long way off. I wrote her occasionally, tried to keep in touch with her, but you know how you are when you're young. You've got nothing on your mind but schoolwork and girls. You make a lot of stupid mistakes. Being a leader is not an easy thing. It takes an attitude of humility, a desire to work hard, and to grow up in all aspects of leadership. So it really is important for us to do the right things to become leaders. Now, there are a lot of other things, and I just want to mention a few of these characteristics. Don't worry about age. That is not important. But grow up in your age. Gain maturity. Gain knowledge. General knowledge, not just some knowledge about, well, I tell you what, I'm going to be the world's greatest electrician. I'm going to be the world's greatest plumber. I'm going to be the world's greatest carpenter. I'm going to be the world's greatest eater. No, don't forget about all this. They're not important. I'm going to be the greatest student of the Bible. That's okay. Don't ever say the world's greatest of anything, even of a Christianity, because it means you're not humble. You want to gain knowledge. That's okay. But don't do it for vanity's sake. 2 Timothy chapter 12. 2 Samuel, chapter 12. And verses 1 through 9 is a story of Nathan. Now, who was Nathan? He was a prophet of God. He was David's prophet, King David, powerful King David. Killed so many people that he was just covered with blood by the time he died. He had all kinds of blood enemies. They were always after his neck. Poor old David. That's when he killed that soldier. And he took the wife, Bathsheba, to be his wife. And Nathan was just a prophet, and he was the big king. And he said, you got to go to Nathan. You got to go to David and tell him. So that's what all 2 Samuel is all about. He began to tell him about this story. That this guy had all kinds of sheep and cattle. And this other fellow had one little ewe lamb. You all remember that story. So this big shot guy said, well, I'll tell you what, let's have a lamb. I don't need to take one of mine. I'll take that other guy's lamb. And he butchered that lamb instead. So Nathan is telling the story to David, and David really got incensed. He said, I'll take care of that guy. He can't have that attitude. That was totally wrong. And Nathan had to say, I'm talking about you, David. You know when he said that? His heart was in his mouth, in his hands. He didn't know what was going to happen. David could have chopped his head off. But David made the sane decision. I have got to repent. I'm wrong. I have got to see this thing through. And he got humbled again, and he said, don't take your spirit from me, please, God. We all know about that. These are all famous verses in your Bible, and I don't need to repeat them. But Nathan had a job, and that tells you something about being a leader. And that is that you have to be a courageous reformer. You've got to be willing to call a spade, and that's not easy. That's one thing. A minister who looks around in a congregation and really knows a congregation is smart enough not to use any personal names about anything. I'd forgotten your name, so you can all relax, guys and gals. I'm not going to give your name. Say, well, now this person has this problem, or that person has that. You don't do that in the ministry. You talk to the whole congregation, and you hope that the person who gets the message and hears it will apply it to himself and do something about it. That's being a courageous reformer. Not easy. Think of Nathan. 1 Kings chapter 22, verses 11 through 18. 1 Kings 22. The prophet Micaiah had to tell it straight. And you know, he said, well, let me get my prophet Micaiah and let him tell me the truth. And he, first of all, said, well, now, king, if you do this here, you're going to have great success. I think that was Jehoshaphat. I forgot now who it was there. I can read it in 2 Kings 22. But he said, oh, wait a minute, Micaiah. I know that you aren't going to tell me this straight. I want you to tell it to me straight. Will we have success? And then he had to say, I'm sorry, Mr. King, or Mr. Kings, as I think both the king of Israel and Judah were there. You're going to be very greatly defeated. In fact, one of you is going to even die in this battle. Now, how would you like to be a courageous reformer to do that? Well, that's the job of a minister. That's the job of a leader. Daniel chapter 5, you all know about Daniel. And I could read that. He was a great leader. But he had to be humble. And he had to be a courageous reformer. Here was Nebuchadnezzar. He was a big shot. I'm telling you, he was powerful. And he told everybody, listen, when you hear all this noise and all these instruments playing, you got to bow down to this idol. Daniel said, no way am I going to do that. I don't care what he does to me. I'm not going to do that. Well, he eventually got thrown into Dion's land. You all know the story. And he thought, well, that takes care of him. Because those lions were ferocious critters, and they were hungry, they wanted to eat. But God just put them all to sleep. Daniel was there in the lion's den, and nothing happened to him. And I think you all know the story then that Nebuchadnezzar said, well, I don't know who was the accuser of this guy, he's perfectly a good kid. All the accusers in the lion's den, and as soon as they were thrown in that den, these really sleepy lions woke up in a big hurry and chewed them to pieces. That's a real valuable story. But Daniel had to stick his neck out and say, I'm not going to bow down to you, and I am not going to listen to you teach anything that is contrary to the Bible. And, of course, you all know the rest of the story. He was a courageous reformer. 1 Kings chapter 21, Elijah had to have guts what he said. And he had really had a lot of enemies. Not only Ahab, but his wife Jezebel both hated him. They wanted to have his hide. And he said, I don't care, they're not going to get it. I got to be honest. I just got to know the right thing. Matthew chapter 14, John the Baptist. You know, here is this very high, big shot in Israel. Then he had to tell him, yeah, it's not right for you to take your brother's wife or whatever it was. It's not legal. He had to tell him that. He lost his head for it. But he was a courageous. You know, he's the kind of guy you want to see in the world tomorrow. You want to know, how did you live through that anyhow? Well, John the Baptist can tell you some stories that probably will stand your hair on end. We had to be a courageous reformer. Acts chapter 4, Peter and John against the Sanhedrin. Who were the Sanhedrin? They were the leaders of all the Jewish people. And Peter and John said, well, I don't care what you say. I'm going to obey God. I'm going to do His will. know, it's really a good story to read. Acts chapter 4, verse 18. Read that story. Acts chapter 7. Stephen, his preaching cost him his life, but he had to say the truth. And I sit up here and I wonder, or stand up here, I'm like, what kind of a situation am I going to be thrown into where I have to say something very truthful, but it's according to the Bible, and I'm going to lose my head for it, or get thrown in jail? I have no idea. I don't even want to think about it, to tell you the truth. Another characteristic of leaders, good leader, is they refuse to take gifts. I mean good old bribes. They just refuse to do that. Cannot be bought. A true leader cannot be bought. And I can tell you the story in 1 Kings chapter 13 of the man of God out of Judah. I don't have time for that because my time's coming right along pretty quickly. 2 Kings chapter 5, Elisha refused the gift from Naaman. Remember, he had this terrible leprosy. And because he was healed, he said, well, here, you take this gift. And he said, no, you keep it. Thank you very much, but I don't want to take it. God did the miracle. I didn't do it. But unfortunately, his servant Gehazi did take the gift. And he ended up with the leprosy of Naaman. So this is all part of the story we have to understand. Doesn't pay to take any kind of gifts or bribes. You cannot bribe a leader, a true leader of God's church. He's above taking money to do anything. If you don't believe me, try me. Just kidding. I think you realize now I'd say no. Daniel himself, chapter 5, besides having great tests, he was bribed too. He said, no, I just don't want to take it. So you have to refuse gifts as a true leader. True leader has to have utmost respect for God's government. Whatever the government of God is, you've got to have respect for it. I know I could tell you a lot about how the ministerial council was formed. It's interesting because I've been with it for a number of years, and I really do enjoy it. But I know that we all have to be very humble about it. And anybody we choose, we really ask them to contribute, but to have utmost respect for God's government. If you're put in a position of doing something, you've got to respect that. 1 Timothy chapter 5, ministers are worth much more, but they're not being paid. Most of them are receiving no money at all. They're willing to do the job for no pay. And that's true of a lot of ministry in God's church. I've never taken a penny from anybody that I can remember. Even for weddings and whatnot, if they offer anything, I say, my pleasure to do it. Well, I say, what in the world? You know, I've been able to make ends meet without having any salary. I go out to Utah and work for a week. That's how I do it. I work for a week, 40 hours. This time I'll be out there 48 hours. And I work all 6 days, 8 hours a day. And this is the job that I used to have there in Orem, Utah, which is very close to Provo. It's down south of Murray. You know where that part of the country is, where Provo is. Salt Lake City is right by the Salt Lake. And then about 35, 45 miles south of that is Provo and Orem. They're little twin cities. 30,000 to 40,000 each. They're small little cities. Respect for God's government also includes always looking for new ministers. You know, if I find somebody in God's church who says, especially young men, boy, I tell you what, you ought to become a part of the ministerial apprentice program. Somebody comes along, I'll be willing to sponsor him and help him. Well, I don't have anybody in Utah. Never had anybody in Utah. Maybe I will have somebody here in Ohio I can help. I don't know. I don't know you fellows yet. I see some of you are pretty old. Some of you are middle-aged. I don't know how many kids we have in here. Kids, I mean, 17, 18-year-olds. To me, they're kids. I'm sorry. They're grandchildren. My youngest grandchildren are 5 and 3. 5 and 4 now. So you got a few years to go to be called a grandchild. James chapter 5 and verse 14 is a very famous verse. Always willing to anoint the sick, even if travel is required. And my wife just was able here recently to purchase a couple of telephones, a couple of extra telephones. The house was already wired. We just plugged them and they worked. Now we can hear the phone ring if we're in our bedroom, or if she's in her office, or if we're in the kitchen. We can hear a phone ring someplace. My phone in my office, sometimes I hear it ring, and I say, oh boy, I got to get up and go after that. And I hope I count the rings as I approach the office. If it's less than three or four rings, I think I'll probably make it. This morning when Farrell Vincent called me, he had already started his answering machine, had started the answering machine working and recording a message, and I picked up, was able to talk with him. And that's the first time I've been able to do that. You know, when I was in Utah, we had an answering machine, but you couldn't interrupt the call. Once the answering machine took up and began to record the message, you couldn't do anything but sit there and listen. Wait till it was over with. That was so frustrating. Well, I like the way it is now. Basically, we have no authority except from God. And we're a ministers only because God has chosen us to be. You're members of God's church only because God has chosen you to be. You are baptized only because God has chosen you to be and has brought you along to where you're ready, or you already have been baptized. Maybe some of you aren't baptized yet. Okay, that's no problem. I hope you will continue to grow to where you are baptized. I don't care how young you are, how old you are. Age is not important. Young people, you have to be a little more concerned because you do have to have a certain degree of maturity, certain understanding, and therefore we tend not to baptize 10-year-olds, 12-year-olds. They're just a little bit too young. If we 17, well, maybe, especially young ladies, they're more mature than 17-year-old kids. Boys, they just don't have maturity. You may have to wait till they're 18 or 19. Well, don't worry about it. Just talk to your minister. Talk to Bill or me. We'll help you out. Respect for God's government. That's a very important characteristic of being a leader. The one thing I don't like to talk about, but is true, we do face a lot of trials and possibly imprisonment. I know it's coming. Maybe even martyrdom. Read about that in Matthew chapter 26. God's ministers have to be willing to do that. We have to be willing to face possible imprisonment or martyrdom. And a lot of people think that maybe that is not that important. I'd be a minister. I don't want to face martyrdom. I don't want to face imprisonment. Well, if you're called to be a minister, you have no choice. You've got to be a minister. And God will show you that He's calling you to be in the ministry. One thing you got to understand, Acts chapter 22, verse 5 says, we will always have enemies. Maybe even among our own family. Maybe among our own neighborhood, even among our relatives. We'll have enemies. We'll have people who think we're absolutely nuts. You believe that? You mean you think we should go to church on Saturday and not on Sunday? I suppose your family members, some of them have thought you were a little bit strange. Saturday, you come all the way down here to Bath to go to church. Or come all the way up from Bath to go to church. I don't know where you live, but it's a big area all around this little neighborhood. They think you're nuts. Well, if you want to be a leader, you have to be willing to be a dead man. You got to be willing to be martyrdom. You got to be willing to be martyred, I should say. You got to be willing to go to prison. Maybe we won't. Maybe God will bless us. It's not really what we have to worry about. You know, there are a lot of other aspects of leadership I could go into, but if you're called by God, you're chosen by Him to do a job, you better volunteer. You better be willing to put your hand up. Say, I'll do it. And there are so many people. I've got one fellow there in my church in Murray, and I don't want anybody to write this down and say, well, Ben Chapman said, I won't give his name. He doesn't even want to open with or close with prayer. I mean, that is so unusual to me that if people can't even open or close with prayer. They're so bashful that they don't even want to do that. Now, how in the world am I ever going to get that guy to become a leader in God's church? Doesn't ever want to contribute in the Feast of Tabernacles and doesn't do anything. His wife's not converted. His son's not converted. And I don't know. He's a nice guy. But unfortunately, he just is so bashful that he never wants to do anything. I mean, he's never even invited me to his home. And I've hinted several times, I wish I could be out there and see your home. He's never asked. To me, then, that doesn't show leadership potential. That shows just the opposite. But I'm talking about having leadership potential. And you know, I look around you, and I don't know you from Adam. But I look around, I say, yeah, there's a lot of people out there that are very attentive to what I'm saying right now. Maybe down deep in their hearts they would like to be leaders, but they don't know how. Well, maybe you need to put your hand up a little more often and show us that you want to contribute something and become a leader in God's church. After all, isn't that what you're all trying to be in God's church one of these days? As a leader in the world tomorrow? Wouldn't you like to lead thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people? You know, what if God says, I want you to go out down here to someplace in Timbuktu, whatever. I want you to take care of that city and convert all the people. Help them as much, and you be their minister for a while. Ordain a few human beings to be the leader. Isn't that your call? Isn't that what you want to do? Or are you just sort of satisfied to come to church and cut it on and wait for that good meal afterwards? Well, I feel sorry for you. You've missed the point. Your responsibility. Please become leaders. Please become humble leaders.